All right, gold member. Don't play the laughing boy. There are only two things I can't stand in this world. People who are intolerant of other people's cultures and the Dutch.
What?
Welcome, everyone, to the Between Two Wheels podcast. We're going to talk about a few things. Things changed. I mean, people's plan A went to shit this week, and a bunch of people's plan B are getting into focus and are getting lined up. Welcome, everybody. This is Tyler Yonke. I hope you're doing well. We're going to talk about the tour of the Basque Country and the drama that went on there, and Paris-Roubaix, which happened today. And yes, Victor, I'm glad to see you're along with us tonight. Welcome. Hope everyone's doing good. I'm doing fine. It's been a rough day. Been doing a lot of work. So let's take a look. First of all, that's a spoiler there for Paris-Roubaix. The tour of the Basque Country and Paris-Roubaix turned out to be boring-ish. There was a lot of drama that was brought into, it was going to be anticipated for both of them. And due to some circumstances, things changed. Look, a few months ago, everyone's going Tour de France. It's going to be amazing. You got Remco Evenepoel, who's done the Giro a few times, won the Vuelta, the 2022 Vuelta. You've got Primoz Roglic, who's won the Giro, who's won the Vuelta, has come in second a few times on the Tour de France. You've got Jonas Vingegaard, who's won the Tour de France a few times, third in the Vuelta. I think it was second. What was he last year? With Primoz and Sepp Kuss. And then you've got Tadej Pogacar, who's won a bunch of monuments, won the Tour de France, displaced. And then he's been second there to Jonas. So this is building up to be, you've got those four guys coming in and it's a lot of anticipation, good teams. Now Roglic isn't with Vivingo and you're like, okay, this is going to be amazing tour this year. And just caution everybody, I know everyone's anticipating that. And then, Tadej Pogacar is going to the Giro here coming up in a few months or a few weeks. And with that in mind, I remember Chris Horner talking about this. He's like, look, it's always the anticipation. You're always like, oh, you got all these. Now, and to back this up, he's saying, look, you always have a bunch of four runners and then you actually get there and, someone's injured. Yeah, but these are four guys that have destroyed everybody else in certain races that they've been in, okay? Jonas has been destroying people in the early season, Tirreno Adriatico, El Camino this year, go back last year to Tour of the Basque Country in similar stage races. Tour de France, that's what he's done. Tadej Pogacar has done that to people, in the Tour. He's done that in little races he's done. Primoz has done that in races he's done as well and come up a little short in the Tour. And Remco is same thing. So with all those, this is just a little different. It's a little bit different because you're anticipating this big clash. And I remember Chris Horner saying, yeah, but someone could get injured. And with that in mind, look at last year, Tadej Pogacar breaks his wrist. He comes into the tour a little lackluster because of it, I think. So with that in mind, we had this Tour of the Basque Country and I was touting it. I'm like, look, this is going to be great. And then you got also had a problem, which was Tadej wasn't there. And then the race itself was just a little bit off to me as far as what it was going to be. But it was still going to be exciting. And then we had problems. So we'll get into that. Oh, okay. Paul Mitchell, thanks for joining us. Again, women's race yesterday was actually better than a better race. Same as Flanders, just saying. Yes, we'll talk about that because I'm not going to talk too much about the women's race. It was more exciting. And dominance is amazing. We just talked about those four riders and they dominate. Tadej Pogacar in Strada Bianca taking off with 80 kilometers to go, destroying everybody. And when you talk about it and you bring him up out of other races, that's an amazing stat and a figure to show that he's just a dominating player. But when you're watching the race, it's a bit of a snooze. Okay. So we had that today. Let's start off with Paris-Roubaix. So we're going to get Paris-Roubaix. We're going to look at some highlights of this, and then we're going to talk a little bit about it. There's not much really to say about team stuff other than one team really kind of dominated. So I when I got up this morning, the race was already through the Arenberg Forest. I rewound and I watched at least going into the Arenberg Forest. It was already breaking up going into there, but they had, you know, Alpecin Phoenix was looking dominant. Remember, Wout Van Aert's not there, so that takes a bit about Mads. Jorgensen, Matteo Jorgensen for Visa Liseberg. He was touted to be there, and then the last minute they pulled it out. I have some speculation about why he was removed from there. They said they made something about him, and not quite. And it didn't say he was sick. It just made it sound like he wasn't quite there. Okay, and I don't know what that means, but I tend to think maybe due to what happened in the Basque Country, that's what happened. Okay, so they're coming into Arenberg Forest, and they had this weird chicane that they decided to add into. You can see it here. It's a big 180 that they take here. And they said the reason they were doing this was to be more safe coming into the Arenberg Forest, where everyone wasn't going to be pushing and shoving. Now you can see here with this group that was coming into this section. I mean, we could probably count them here: 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 13, 14. I mean, maybe 20. 25 riders even there. So this wasn't your typical where you've seen coming into the forest, where the Arenberg Forest, where it's just, you know, almost 100 riders. They had already smashed themselves out. And I don't know if the riders, if let's say Alpecin Phoenix said, hey, this chicane is problematic to us, therefore we're going to take a crack at this coming in, and we're going to destroy everybody coming into this section or prior to it up until here. And so that it's not a problem. And that could be now the race organizers are going to say, look at us. We made it safe because we had the chicane. No, there's 25 riders. So shut up. So they come into this. This is like where it really always tips off, but it's already been tipping off here. So they come into this section. Mads Pedersen is already drilling. He's at the front, kind of destroying people out the back already. And then you get Matthew Vanderpoel comes to the front, shows his legs. There's a little bit of separation. They come out of this section where there's like three of them. Matthew Vanderpoel looks lights out ahead of everybody. One of the Van Dijk brothers is in there. Mads Pedersen, I think you had maybe Pullet was in there with him. Jasper Philipsen. So already you have Philipsen, Mads Pedersen, Matteo Vanderpoel, and one other rider there. And then they kind of came back together. There's some people had some flats, which is Jasper Philipsen. Mads Pedersen's looking good. Bessinger gets some trouble. He's on the blower complaining about things. And 70 kilometers is kind of all green groups again from this back section. Once again, guys are going in, guys are going out. But Alpecin Phoenix has the dominant role in this thing up front. The team is out there. They're well represented. Vermeersch is up there. Philipsen's up there. Matthew Vanderpoel. And they come into the section with 60 kilometers, 59.7. And Matthew Vanderpoel, I mean, his team's on the front. And he just says, excuse me. And goes right through them. And the race is pretty much over. I mean, he immediately has, you know, 8-10 seconds, comes out of this thing. He got another 20 seconds. Next thing you know, he has a minute. Then he's got a minute and a half. He's got 3 minutes. Tom Pidcock has some problems. Remember, Tom Pidcock, he almost went off the road there. He's a good cyclocross rider, but this is his first Paris-Roubaix. And the group behind, you had Pithy, you had Niels Pollitt, you had Jasper Philipsen, and always sit in there, Mads Pedersen. You had Stefan Kung, he's up there as well, and they're always looking good. So you had Kung and Pithy, which are teammates for Groupama FDJ. But Prithy gets a flat, so he comes out of this section. Then you just have those other guys up there, and they're just never doing it. And they're not pulling it back. And it's not like Flanders, where you actually saw Matthew Vanderpoel. When he came to the finish, he was exasperated. At this point, you can see the last 15 or so kilometers. I mean, he's got 255. He gets up 308 on these guys. But at some point, he just kind of like shuts it down and lets it happen. So it's coming in a little bit, you know, not quite as bad. Philipsen's kind of making attacks. Mads Pedersen's always kind of keeping it together. But in the end, they come into the velodrome. And like I said, it was somewhat of a boring race in effect because you just had Vanderpool. No one was within him. I mean, last year he won by 40 seconds. This year, like, you know, he sits up here and he doesn't do the bike spike across the line. He doesn't stand up on his bike like he did before, but he has a nice post up on the velodrome, getting the second or his back-to-back win at Paris-Roubaix this year. He won Flanders last year, so it's another, it's a back-to-back. Or this year he won, so he won back-to-back Flanders and Paris-Roubaix. He didn't, look, by the way, he's won every other year at Flanders, right? 24, 22, and 20. And then he won 2023 and 2024 for Paris-Roubaix for lights out for that. Now, the group behind, they come in for the sprint finish here for second place, which is really the only thing we're looking at here. Niels Pollitt kind of took off to begin with. Mads Pedersen goes on the outside, and it looks like maybe he's going to hold off and get second place. But in the end, Philipsen comes down on the bottom side here and just has too much of a kick and ends up getting an easy second place. Mads Pedersen for third, Niels Pollitt for fourth. And then behind them, you had Prithy and I'm trying to remember the other guy. Well, Vermeesh, maybe. So you had Matthew Vanderpoel, Jesper Philipsen at 3 minutes right behind him, Mads Pedersen, Niels Pollitt, Stefan Kung, Gianni Vermeesh. So you had Alpecin at one, two, and six. Then Lawrence Prithy at seventh place, Jordi Meus for Bora in eighth. And what was interesting in here, Tim van Dijk. Let's take a look here. You can see this velodrome, and he took a corner. It came up on a group of from about, what, 8th place here to 16th. So it was like, you know, 8 or 9 of them. He comes up. He's trying to get past him, and he goes up a little bit too much on the infield, and he passes them out, and he ends up, no one chases him. He easily beats everybody. He has a little bit of a gap, and they say, no, you went too low on the track, and therefore we're relegating you back. So Tim van Dijk, instead of getting 8th place, he ends up in 16th, and too bad for him. For that's the top Visa Lisa bike rider for the race and Paris-Roubaix. So the women's race, we could take a look at the I didn't actually watch much of it. I saw the finish of that yesterday. Much better because it came down to a sprint finish with all the ladies in there. Let's add this to the screen. And you had Lotta Capecchi, Elisa Balsamo, Pfeiffer, Georgie, Mariana Voss, Amber Crack, Ellen van Dijk, and for the top 5 places there. And then just 6 seconds back was, I'm sorry, Ellen van Dijk was sixth place, just 6 seconds back. And then Lorena Wiebes in seventh place, 28 seconds. So, I mean, you know, look, 28 seconds is Zoe Bagstedt for first to 16th place. You know, so much better. Do we even have an American finishing here? Lily Williams down here in 45th place, 429. So as Paul said there, much, much more competitive race in Paris-Roubaix for the women than the men, much like Flanders. But look, it's we didn't have Wout. Wout went to the altitude camps. He was primed and ready. Wasn't quite there on what, E3, I think is what it was, Saxo Bank race. Didn't quite have it. Then crashed out there. What was the one before there? Maybe we'll have to take a look because I'm trying to remember the race that he couldn't quite hold the wheel of Matthew Vanderpoel. Let's see. We'll go to Matthew Vanderpoel. His results for this were, it was E3. He got the first place. That's the one where I think Wout ended up third place, but was chasing him for a while. Couldn't quite bring that in. And then you had Wevelgem. Matthew Vanderpoel was second. And Mads Pedersen got him on that one. Well, it was a sprint between the two of them. And then the Vlaanderen Varden Ronde. So, I mean, look at Matteo Vanderpoel's results for this year. He was 10th in Milano San Remo, his first race. But that was a race where he did so much work coming over the Poggio, keeping Tadej Pogacar in check, was with him down there. And then when they come down to the bottom, Jasper Philipsen and his teammates are and says, dude, I've got the legs. And he brought back Sobrero, Pidcock, the one other rider, and in the end ended up leading out Philipsen, who gets the win. So he gets a 10th place, but his team gets a win. Okay, so first race, team win, he got 10th. Second race, E3 Saxo Bank, he wins, won a solo. He gets second in the breakaway on Gent Wevelgem. He wins solo on Flanders, and he wins solo on Paris-Roubaix. I mean, literally, he and his team have only been first or second since he's done his 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 races this year. Wow for Matthew Vanderpoel. Wow, not for Wout. Wow for Matthew Vanderpoel. Stellar, stellar, stellar. Okay, well, then we had the Tour of the Basque Country. And look, when I had this Tour of the Basque Country, I looked at it and I said, ugh, it looks pretty good, but for the most part, I'm a little disappointed in the profiles because none of them had, I mean, look, it's tough for these racers altogether, but it didn't have the what you'd see in some of the other ones, Paris-Roubaix or Paris-Nice as an example, or Toronto Adriatico, where you had, you know, top GC day, you knew what it was, and a summit finish. So here's the stage profile here. We had a time trial to begin with. It had a little pitch up at the end, which was, you know, a little bit innocuous, but it kind of hurt their legs, I think, on the first 10-kilometer time trial. And you had stage two. Now, none of this stuff in the Basque Country. There's just too much lumpy and pitches up here for sprinters to really be involved. But you can tell it wasn't a GC day either. Stage two, same type of thing. And it's not long. It's 160 kilometers. Oops, that's stage four. Let's go to stage three. Once again, stage three, you got some plateaus, some pitches, some climbs in here. Cat ones, cat twos, cat threes, nothing more than that. But it ends on a flat, so it gives sprinters, quote-unquote, time. You know, it's going to be a group coming in there. Stage four, you had a climb. They're like, okay, look, there's a Cat 3 near the end, and then it kind of goes down. That's going to be, and it's Cat 3, Cat 3, Cat 3. It's going to be a little bit more. That's going to be GC-wise. And then stage five, same thing. And then stage six, they do say Eibar to Eibar. This is a brutal one because it's got some nasty little climbs in here in the middle. Okay, fine. So let's start off with stage one and some results. We'll just walk through the results here and then kind of get to the big stuff. So stage one, Primoz Roglic looks like he actually has a better kind of a rebound in himself, in a sense, from what he had done at Paris-Nice, which he just didn't look good at all, especially the last day. But he comes up with a flying time trial here. He puts time into everybody. At the finish, he said he had done all this recon, and every time he did recon, he just went to the right. Well, he's passing a rider right at the finish, and he goes to the right. Well, the stage actually goes to the left, so he has to turn around and come back. He loses like 10 seconds, but in the end, he still was enough to get the stage win over Jay Vine, 7 seconds on him, Skilmos in third, 10 seconds over him, Remco Evenepoel, 11 seconds. Now, Remco had fallen, so there were some issues about, like, the weather. Jonas, he had 15 seconds on him. Ayuso, he had another 16 on him. Brandon McNulty, 23 on Brandon. Del Toro, 24. Buitrago, same around there. Tail Gegenhardt, 26. And that's, you know, pretty much, we're not going to go much further. I mean, look, way down here at the bottom. Well, Sean Quinn was 47 seconds. But Sepp Kuss, we're going to have to talk about Sepp Kuss. And I'm wearing my Vuelta climbers jersey shirt today just for Sepp Kuss. But he was a minute 27 behind Remco. Okay. He didn't look so good in Catalunya. You know, it looked like he had a chance to go for it in that super steep, pitchy stage there. Pogacar and his team destroyed them. Soler and those kind. I went too far out. Really took the wood to him. So we're going to have to talk about that. So that's what's his name? Pogacar. He's in the lead on stage one. Stage two, they come in here. It's once again, it's going to be a diminished sprint finish, which it was. The top 41 or so guys all came in there, and Paul Lapierre won it over Samuel Battistelli and Luis Viverca and Paul Mac, and then Brandon McNulty's down here in ninth. No change on the GC with Primoz Roglic still 10 seconds over Skilmos. Okay, stage three. Now, stage three is where shit starts to go weird. I was actually thinking, when I'm watching stage one and you see Pogacar take off to the wrong side of the road when he's destroying everybody and he goes down the wrong path, and then it's the car exit rather than the finish line. He has to turn around. And I'm like, it's a Roglic type of thing where shit's starting to go wrong. He came out of it just fine, but he does have a tendency for kind of an omen of things to come. And that, to me, I remember thinking that at the time, like, this is kind of an omen of shit that's going to go wrong here this week. And I hope it doesn't. I want to see the battle of all these guys. Okay. I'm not particularly a fan anymore of Roglic. I'm not a real particular fan anymore of Jonas. I kind of like Remco. Roglic, no. Jonas, no. Remco, I've not been a fan. You know, he says some wacky stuff, and he seems to be one of these stars that bitches and complains a lot. But there's something about him that I'm liking more and more. If he didn't ride for that Lefevre guy in that stupid Lotto Soudal team, I would probably like him a lot more. Okay, I'd probably be a bigger fan. I'm a fan of, I don't know. I'm really a fan of Sepp Kuss, and so, you know, that kind of tainted me last year. Stage three, we kind of hear Quentin Hermans wins with Eduardo Zambanini over Alex Aramburu, and Ethan Hayter's back there in sixth place. No change in GC, but we had a big wreck this stage. Coming around a right-hand corner, I want to say maybe 30 or so kilometers to go. You look up, Bora team is kind of in disarray, and Roglic is up against this building. He had wrecked. It's a left-hand corner, and he went flying off to the right. Didn't really see it, but he was cut up. He was all dozy, kind of. They're like, hey, what? Maybe we do a concussion protocol. I don't know. But they put him back on his bike. Now he's about 2 minutes down. There's a big climb that they have to get up to. He ends up, the race at the front kind of neutralized itself due to what happened with him. He gets back to the race, takes a little bit of time. His whole team comes back there. His whole right side is just shredded up. And you're like, okay, well, here's Roglic again, once again, being down on the ground, and we'll see what happens with him. Gets up there, and then the race just didn't really kick off. And I don't know if it didn't kick off because they're just like, does it feel right at this point to kick off against Roglic, but they didn't do it. So stage three was kind of null and void. Coming into stage four, and you're expecting a GC battle. Look, we missed one yesterday, okay? We kind of died down. And we didn't really have much because Roglic hit the deck. Well, the whole team in the race is coming down to, you know, getting ready for this big climb. They're flying down one of these descents. Next thing you know, there are bodies all over the place. And we've changed the landscape, in a sense, of the Tour de France. Now, I think I actually have, let's take a look. I think I have a video that we can actually look up this crash. Now, but like, hey, you really shouldn't be watching videos of this crash. I don't know. We'll talk about that too. You know, they were showing it a lot, which I actually personally cared about. Okay, so they're coming around this corner. Now, there's some stuff we've talked about. There was a rumor out there that Jonas had gone and reconned this route earlier in the year, and he reported to the Tour of the Basque Country people, this corner is dangerous. And they didn't do anything about it. That has subsequently been denied. And matter of fact, Team Lisa Vike said, nope, that never happened. That's fake news. So just so you know, that Jonas didn't cairn out there to the race, or, you know, report bad. Now, the road surface, it's hard to see it here, but I've seen pictures of it coming up, you know, where it is, where there's roots basically being grown across underneath the cement that are made it a little bumpy. These guys were doing like almost 80 kilometers an hour, so they were flying down here. Let's take a look here. You can see there's a bump there. Tess Fassione, he's in third place. He's a Trek rider. His front wheel just bobbles, and he goes out. Right in front of him, though, and you think he hits the wheel, the back wheel of Remco, which kind of puts him off, and he's now got to go forward. Behind here, though, you've got Jay Vine already getting hit. I think it's, I've looked at this a bunch of times. It's hard to tell, but I think back here, right in the back, already going down, hitting their head on the ground. I think that's either Jonas or that is Roglic, and I can't tell which one. I tend to think it might be Roglic. There's this thin ditch in here in the road, so let's keep playing it up here. So a guy's going this ditch over here, but over here on the far right is Remco. Now he just misses a tree. He slides out. He's sliding across the ground. Now look, this is a forest type of thing. So it's not just so easy as like, oh, you're just sliding in that. And look at these bikes getting up here, because there's these rocks, and then there's this cement culvert here. Now Remco flying along and sliding on the ground. You don't know what's down there. There's stumps, there's sticks, whatnot. He ends up breaking his collarbone. yeah, dramatic music here. He goes over the top. He breaks the collarbone. There's a UAE rider that's out here doing some cyclocross. He's fine. Whoever's in the front here, he waves his hand up. I think it's Landa. Waves his arm up here in disgust. But, okay, there we go. So it wasn't very great for what we had here. But I think there was, let me take a look here, because I think we're going to get a little bit of a write-up. We can at least talk about. Okay, let's see if they let me. Sometimes Vela News doesn't like and let me actually read this stuff. Okay, there we go. Remco Evenepoel, Jonas Vingegaard, and Primoz Roglic all crashed and were forced to abandon Thursday in a horrific high-speed spill in Stage 4 of the Azula Basque Country. Time, three of the peloton's biggest stars were among several racers who fell in a sweeping descent about 33 kilometers in the to go in the stage. Several high-profile riders suffered broken bones and other serious injuries, but it appears no rider was in a life-threatening situation. Of the rider's front tire appeared to slip out and cause a chain reaction behind. Not necessarily, I mean, kind of. You're doing that, probably grabbing the brakes too much when you see riders doing that. But guys from behind were falling down, you know, kind of independently of their own. Roads were dry, and it was not obvious that it had provoked a high-speed chain reaction. Okay, we came down the first steep climb, and the road was really bumpy, and we were fighting for a position, said Little Trek's Mateo Skilmos, who avoided the crash. Unfortunately, we came a little bit too fast, and were some bumpy roads. Some guys crashed, and a lot of guys followed. It was really unlucky, and I don't think it's anyone's fault. Evenepoel bounced off the pavement, fell into a wooded area. He later appeared walking and cradled his right arm. Overnight race leader Roglic, who started Thursday after falling in a heavy spill Wednesday, also fell into what appeared to be a drainage ditch. He was later spotted walking to the team car and drove away the Bora Hansgrohe. Yeah, so Roglic actually was least scathed of these, other than 2 days in a row of going down. Worse off were two-time Tour de France champion Vingegaard, who was being attended to by medical staffers. The Visa Lisa Mike star was placed into a stretcher with an oxygen mask and transported into an ambulance. Other riders fell into a concrete drainage ditch and struck boulders that were alongside the roadway. No padding or bales were the line in the sweeping of the corners. There were scenes of chaos and concern as riders rushed to help their fallen teammates. Three official ambulances and medical staff helped to attend to them. Okay, stuff crashed. They're going to read. There's all the breakdown here. Remco, broken collarbone and scapula. That's going to be rough to get back for the tour, okay? Jonas Vingegaard, broken collarbone and ribs. And he had same thing, pneumothorax, same thing as Stefan Kras here, which I think is like a punctured lung type. That's going to be the problem. I don't think Vingegaard goes back for the tour. Jay Vine, he looked bad. He's laying in there. He had cervical and two thoracic spine vertical body fractures. So, they said no surgery was necessary, probably like similar to what I had. I could talk about that a little bit. Natación, Tesfacion, numerous contusions and abrasions, pneumothorax, broken ribs, two dorsal vertebrae fractures for Steph Kras. Sean Quinn, the American, concussion, fractured sternum, abrasions, and bruising. So those two dorsal vertebrae fractures is kind of like what I had when I had my wreck a few years ago. And basically, I mean, look, let's talk about kind of the film and watching. I know people like, we don't need to keep seeing this crash over and over. I don't know. Okay. I got an experience of, once again, Chris Horner talked about it, and he came out with a short video, and he said, look, when he's had those crashes, it was imperative that his wife was able to see that. And to keep watching enough video on him to know that he was actually alive. So when he moved his legs, such you can see here with, you know, Jonas, he's actually moving his legs. And these guys are like, okay, when I see that, now I know they're not dead bodies. Okay. And that's probably important for the family. I don't know. I'm not involved in that. Am I watching it because it's like crash porn? No, not me personally. So I don't know what to think about that necessarily. Like I said, if you're going to err on one side and the family doesn't have to watch it, but if they want to know and they want to see what's going on, I would probably prefer myself, if my family was down there or someone, to see what's happening, that they're okay. They're maybe you're Roglic's or Remco's wife or spouse, and you're like, oh, he's walking to the car. Thank God. Oh, I see Jonas is actually moving his leg. Oh, Jay Vine is actually doing that. Okay, that's pretty good. Now, these crashes are happening. Some of them are blaming disc brakes, that you're going into these climbs, these descents too fast, that you can brake at the last moment. Ultimately, I mean, look, last year, I started to think about this too. Last year, we saw... Tour Switzerland, one of those, I think it was, where Gino Mader crashed and died, okay? And you also had Magnus Sheffield crash out as well. Didn't die, but went to the hospital. Oddly, Skilmos ends up winning that race with Ayuso and over Remco. So it's weird that then Skilmos, the next day, these guys crash out, he actually takes the lead. Now, this stage was neutralized, and in the end, you had... Louis Menke's getting the stage win. So what's going to happen? So maybe we should just take a look here and just finish off this race, because it still had some excitement. Next day, you had Roman Grigori winning over Orlus Aru and Max Shackman, kind of in a sprint finish with a bunch of guys. That day, let's actually take a look here. Sepp Kuss, there's an interview with Sepp Kuss. Hopefully this one give me a strike. Stage four, he doesn't seem to be blaming anybody, but let's see what Sepp Kuss had to say about the crash. Let's go to 1.25 here.
You in English. Tell us what you know exactly. Seems like the crash happened in a place where the road was quite bad, quite bumpy. But what do you know exactly?
Yeah, it's hard to say. When I went through, I didn't notice anything, but yeah, for sure in the front, fighting for position, and yeah, always. Something can happen if somebody misses the corner, or yeah.
And then what happened? What did you know? What did you talk about with your teammate when there was this moment? Of, I guess you didn't know much, but
yeah, we didn't really know much. Some of the team stayed behind with Jonas, yeah, I really don't know what happened. I know he's I think stable condition. Yeah.
Yeah, the team said he was conscious.
Yeah.
And then you talk with the other riders. There was a decision to not race anymore. It was not possible anymore.
I don't know how the decision was made. But yeah, I think yeah, when something like that happens, there's other things that are more important than continuing. Yeah, I don't know too much info.
how did you see it?
I didn't see anything because I was a bit behind. So when I came through, they were already off the road. Yeah.
You stopped at that moment to take a look to check the situation of you?
No, I didn't, because it was going really fast. So if I stopped, it would have also been dangerous. But we had some guys that were already off the road waiting. So yeah, it's also hard to see those images.
But he's conscious was kind of a positive thing.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. He's conscious, and yeah, I don't know the extent of the injuries, but at least he's in the hospital now. So,
so that was the interview with Sepp Kuss there. And now the reason I kind of play that is, one, it's interesting. He's saying, "I know I didn't stop because I kept rolling." Well, no, it's dangerous. You don't just pull up and stop. Now there was another interview. I don't think I'll play it here, which was interview at the start of stage five. He talks about actually at the end of stage five. There's another interview with him, and he's like, "I just sat up." Now he gets in the break on stage five, and he starts accumulating King of the Mountain points, and then gets kind of spit out. He loses like another 6-7 minutes or so. So he's, and then I'm like, okay, the way he spoke about sitting up, saving his legs, it's obviously for stage six. And with that in mind, let's just get to real quick to some of the highlights for stage six. He was off in a break with Kreuzwick and a few others. There was Arietta, I think is the name for UAE up there. Trek had done a great job on stage five of keeping Skilmos in the lead. He only had a 4-second advantage over Ayuso. It was really, you know, touch and go. And remember, a few years ago, you had Brandon McNulty in the lead at this race coming in and then kind of getting blown out. And Pogacar was riding for him, but yet they did some weird shit. And I think Jonas ended up destroying everybody for that. So you basically had, or maybe it was Roglic. I don't remember which one of those it was. Either way, coming in here, it's a little bit of redemption. Sepp Kuss, like I said, Steven Kreuzwick, they're getting all the KOMs that they have. Oscar Olney is in there. Remember, he won Wallunga Tour Down Under. You had Chavez is up there. You had a good smattering of people, but in the last, 30 or 40 kilometers, there's two climbs left to go. Skillmos actually attacks. Now, before that, they had the big climb in the middle, 50, 60 K to go. There's the 3-minute gap up to the lead up there. And Marc Soler of UAE goes off with another guy, Leclerc, I think it was, Le Cerf, dumps him immediately and then makes the bridge across. At this point, the 3 minutes had been already whittled down to two. He makes the bridge across up to his teammate and Sepp Kuss's guy up there with Arrieta. Now there's those guys. And then behind, you start to have a little bit of a shakeup. Skillmos tries to attack. He drops Ayuso just momentarily. At this point, Arrieta had been spit out of the front group. He comes back there. He shifts back. He drills it, brings Ayuso back up to Skillmos, and then Skillmos attacks and drop. I'm sorry, Ayuso attacks and drops Skillmos. They go over the top of the climb. They come down. They have another climb to go. Skillmos gets back on. Now you've got Soler who's sitting up. It's a redemption, but they don't have anybody there for Skillmos. Now they had up the road. A teammate of Little Trek. He had dropped out and wasn't able to do much any help at this point. And then Skillmos gets dropped by Ayuso. Carlos Rodriguez goes up to Ayuso, and those two work together. And we can kind of drift through it now. Coming into the end here, you basically just have Ayuso and Rodriguez. Behind, you have Skillmos and Only, along with Marc Soler, just tagging on. And there's time bonuses up there. Ayuso, they have, you can see here, 45 seconds. So Skillmos is going to lose his lead to Ayuso, but he still has 45 second lead over Carlos Rodriguez. But Carlos Rodriguez is going to get the win gifted to him because Ayuso says, hey, we don't want to attack each other. You do work with me instead of making me do all the work. You get the stage win and you may be able to, you get the bonus seconds. You might actually get second place, which is come down here. Rodriguez ends up getting the stage win. Ayuso gets second, and behind him, they needed 45 seconds. Skillmos did. He comes around the corner. He's pumping for it. So is Only. Everything looks like he's going to save himself, but Marc Soler comes around there and pips him at the line for third, gets those important 4 seconds and time bonuses, and Skillmos ends up in third place as a result. But there's a stage win. But let's see if we can see the overall. There you go. Juan Ayuso wins the win, gets the win, 42 seconds over Carlos Rodriguez. Mateo Skillmos loses by a second to Carlos Rodriguez and gets put down to third place. And Marc Soler moves up into fourth. UAE, first, fourth, fifth with Brandon McNulty, seventh with Isaac Del Toro. I mean, that's a solid, for the bad stuff happening. Okay, so let's talk real quick. Okay, Paul said Bergodeau, whoever with Total Energy is also overshot the turn in the break. Yes, he did. Team should have radioed out riders. Absolutely correct. Should have done it. There's not a lot, I imagine, of dissent to have culverts, cement culverts like this. You probably could have done something about it from a team man or a director's perspective of possibly putting barriers or something along the lines, something in there to at least help in this situation. The Basque Country and some of these Spanish races can be somewhat dangerous. I think this is also the same race that, what's his name? Oh, geez, Tyler. He rode for Trek. His dad was a racer in the 80s. He now does gravel races. Peter Stetna. There you go. He broke his leg. He hit one of these poles in the middle of the road. So, not always everything is what it can be for safety in some of these races. And it is a little bit disappointing. I don't know if the riders need to start policing themselves on the descents so that they just don't have these kind of wrecks. Kind of like, hey, we don't have to. We don't have to go this fast. We don't have to race downhill. They're saying these guys are riding 50, 56, 58 front tooth chain rings just so they can keep up with the groups going downhill. That seems a bit much, but there you have it. So what's this going to do for, Pogacar, he's going to the Giro. Maybe he shouldn't now at this point, but I still think he could go to the Giro and do the double. So Wout crashed out. He was going to go to the Giro. He still may go to the Giro. Okay, you got that crazy situation. I think Lisa Bike may actually have pulled Jorgensen from Paris-Roubaix, who's going to do his first time in Paris-Roubaix, because you just can't afford to have another rider injured, and there's a good chance that could have happened today in Paris-Roubaix. Pulled him so to make sure he's good for the tour. Okay, that's my thought. Now, are you going to put all your luck on a guy that's brand new, didn't even finish the tour last year, almost won a stage, but ended up, third or fourth up the Puy de Dome last year? You're not going to put your eggs in his basket. You're probably going to put them in the basket, though, of maybe a Steven Kryzwick, who's been on the podium at the tour. He definitely was at the Giro. Well, he had the leader's jersey and then hit a snowbank. So I don't know. I'll have to look back. I think he was actually third or so at the Tour de France. I want to say before. But Stefan Sepp Kuss obviously won the Vuelta last year. He beat his two own teammates, right? He's been up there. He's been in the top 20, top 10 of the Tour de France, always in the top there and be able to be one of the last guys in the race. And if you pigeonhole him and help him out to be just the guy, he could be that person that could come out in the Tour de France. So I think that's their best bet for Visa Lisa bike, because I just can't see with the pneumothorax that has happened with Jonas, he's going to be able to, you got to heal your lungs before you're able to even get your legs going, right? So he's not going to be able to get, you're just going to lose too much. I just don't see it happening for him now to be back for the tour. So I think that Visa, Lisa bike, unless they're going to just go stage hunting and maybe, start sprinting, bring, what's their sprinter's name there? I'm losing it all. You're just not going to be able. I think you've got to bring Sepp Kuss as your main guy, and you've got to bring him for as the main situation. So Victor says Poggi going to the Giro. Yes, he is definitely going to the Giro. And I see him lining himself up to do the Tour Giro double. He may make the Giro really boring this year. Who knows? Hopefully he doesn't go in there super hot, and then you've got a different aspects and different dynamics so that it could create some drama and some interest for us. I think Garrett Thomas is going there. But Sepp Kuss hasn't been looking particularly excellent yet. So now maybe they're thinking, okay, well, we've got several months. It's not July. It's just April. Just turned April. I mean, we're on April 7th here. You got a little bit of time before you go to the tour. So, Sepp, you have time to get there. You got to get your shit together. The problem with Sepp Kuss, especially with the Tour de France, is his inability to time trial. It came out okay last year in the Vuelta because it was a shorter time trial, had a bit of a climb in it. And with that in mind, you just don't have it. But you just don't have that luxury that you would in the Tour de France. So Roglic, maybe he's still one of the best opportunities. Yes, he wasn't looking great at Paris-Nice, but he started to look better here. But then he crashes. Okay, but he didn't break any bones. Remco, collarbone. What else did we say? He had his something or other of celiac. Or no, what it was? I don't know. Something else he hurt himself with. Those to me don't bode well either for him. So once again, you're looking at Roglic, you're looking at Pogacar, maybe a showdown between those two guys again, but I still think you got a Visa Lisa bike option here with Wout coming in and Sepp Kuss. You could still have some very good help. There we go. That's what we have. So what is coming up on the schedule? Next races we have are Amstel Gold on the 14th. That's a week from today. Flesh Wallonne on the 17th. That's your midweek race. And Liège-Bastogne-Liège on the 21st, so the next two big Sundays, Amstel and Liège. And then we got Tour Romandie coming in, Giro on the 4th of May, Dauphiné on the 2nd of June, Tour Suisse in June, and the very end of June, June 29th, Tour de France. So, shit's coming. It's all coming to a four. Sooner rather than later. All right. So next week we'll talk about Amstel Gold. I'm sorry. Yeah, Amstel Gold. We'll talk about Amstel Gold next week and maybe some other things going on here. Appreciate everybody joining us on a good Sunday. Dutchman wins the Paris-Roubaix. Until next week, we'll give you a little flavor of the Giro. Out.
Froome now, he goes on the offensive, he goes on the attack over the top of this final climb, and nobody at the moment can go with him.
He had 75 kilometers to go, and now under the Flamme Rouge, there he is still, the virtual Maglia Rosa on the road. Who would have thought it at the start of today? But Chris Froome, master.